one, it's either two sides of a coin. You can use this system to go to sleep very easily, for example, or you can use it to stay awake. You can use it to, let's say, focus your attention, or you can use it to simply relax. You can use it to explore any form of various levels of consciousness. You can get back all the way into your various internal non-conscious systems, or systems that are not ordinarily aware, available to your beta consciousness. This will let you get into those, and this, as a result, lets you perform things that you couldn't ordinarily do. I think that's the best way to put it. And it also, of course, the high end of it is that by using this in various combinations, one can get into this out-of-body state, or simply explore and be into other states of consciousness as against this time-space physical matter consciousness.
Well, we know well that if you can balance your left and right brain and bring to bear your full faculties, as it were, you become far more creative than you could in any other way. As far as this pure creativity is concerned, you probably will be far more healthy and in a better state of health.
And you see, the uniqueness, again, is this not an either-or process, but a simultaneous process. We have yet to complete, by far, the potentials that exist in this coherent brain pattern. It becomes tremendously exciting because of the fact that one can, say, a college student can use this in a form of concentration and retaining material and get a 4-point average in school. It can run from a 1.5 to a 4-point in one semester.
I mentioned tapes, Bob. Are those available to the public? Or?
Some of them are, yes. Again, if one writes this link, they can find what they are. We even have utilizing the hemisync process, we have a tape that you can shave 5 points off your golf score. Very effectively.
Very good.
And it is the ability to, again, get an encoding that works throughout your mental physical system instead of just one part of it.
If Tommy Lasorda is hearing the show, he may want to send some tapes down to the Dodgers there at Vero Beach and shave with them. Get a few more home runs this year.
Incidentally, while we're digressing and not talking, there's what appears to us a very interesting article in the current issue of Mother Earth News about some of our work. And we think it's worthwhile reading.
Well, Helen has been standing by here. She wants to talk about the black tunnel. Helen, I want you to stand by just a few more moments, and we'll be right back to you.
Okay, welcome home.
Well, I'm back.
Hope you had a nice vacation.
I certainly did.
Good. I'd like to address a question to Mr. Monroe with regarding to having a floating feeling, and you wake up in a hospital, and you're stuck in a black tunnel, and just above your head is a white light. And I know when I go to that white light, I'm going to wake up on the other side. I can hear the doctors talking to him, talking and everything else. And I think, oh, dear God, please don't do that. I'm going to go through the white light. And I'm just wondering if Mr. Monroe has ever come across any other cases like this.
Sounds familiar.
It does?
I didn't hear the last part of it.
Well, she was wondering, she had what it sounded like as a near-death experience there, where she was in a black tunnel, saw a white line at the end. She could hear the doctors talking when she was in the hospital, and she didn't want to go.
Well, that's, this is a, we synthesize that experience a great deal. And so it's very common to us. We have means by which you learn how to go through that tunnel. And the best way I can describe it is say that as you are now, you're in a clearing, and here's a dark forest, as it were, and an unknown forest to you. And so what we do, we established a guidepost into that forest deep enough so that you can go back and forth from the clearing, say, to that point in the forest, till it becomes very, very natural for you. You have no fears about it at all. And then we establish another guidepost, as it were, further in. And that you can see the first guidepost from the second, as it were. And so you have a feeling of complete comfort of doing this. And this going through the tunnel is merely, from our point of view, setting up a series of guideposts that you can get from one to the other and feel comfortable about it. So therefore, then you do get into the light on the other side, as it were, on the at the end of the tunnel. And then that's when, from our point of view, that's when the action starts.
Well, I have been pronounced clinically dead twice. And it was so beautiful over there, I didn't want to come back.
Well, there, you'd be surprised. Under the type of state that we speak of, if you don't want to come back, well, someone kind of gently escorts you back.
Oh, yes. I was slightly informed that to come back, and I woke up. And I was gone for all the first time. I was gone for 6 hours. The second time, I was gone for 8 hours. And it was so beautiful on the other side and so peaceful. I just didn't want to come back, period.
Well, it seems to be the...
But in the interim, I've been in the black tunnel so many times. It's unbelievable.
Sort of a classic experience there, the near-death experience, Helen. Okay? Does that help you? We got a lot of calls to go here, Helen.
Okay, Derwin. Well, God bless and thanks very much.
All right. Thank
Bye-bye.
You very much. All right, Helen, we hear that over and over, what she goes through there. We're 23 minutes past 11 o'clock on a Saturday night. I'm Bill Jenkins with Robert A. Monroe on Open Mind, and I believe we have Bob on the line. Bob, welcome aboard.
Hi, how you doing?
All right.
I'm from Newport News, Virginia, Robert.
Hi, that's very good.
I lived in Falls Church, Virginia, up to 1969.
Yes.
What's on your mind tonight there?
Okay, I have a story. It's really wild, but it's true.
Okay.
Okay, when I lived in Falls Church, Virginia for 2 years, my brother was in the Vietnam War, and...
Can you speak up, Bob?
Okay. My brother, I lived up in Falls Church, Virginia for 2 years, and my brother was in Vietnam, and I had only one brother, and we moved from Falls Church, Virginia to Tustin, California. And he was wounded, and we moved out here to California, and we made a resident in Tustin, California.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a UFO sighting in Falls Church just before we moved out here, me and two other friends of mine. And when we moved to Falls Church, one afternoon, I'm trying to make this very short.
Please.
One afternoon, I went upstairs. We had a split-level apartment. And I went up to my room one afternoon. No one was home. And I laid in my bed, and I put on my stereo. It went off. And I went to sleep. And I woke up because there was something in my room, and there was a small being standing in front of my bed. And I woke up on my elbows, and I looked at this thing, and he smiled at me. He was... a red bean, and he looked at me, and I looked at him on my elbows as I'm looking at him, and as I opened my mouth ready to say something, he went around the side of my bed, and I followed him with my eyes, and we looked at each other. I got ready to scream, and he touched my arm, and my body felt like when your leg goes to sleep, and it went kind of numb, and I woke up at that same instant, and I was numb. The bean was about three and a half to 4 feet tall. He was red, and he had a smile.
Did he go away?
He went away when I woke up, but he was there.
Are you wondering whether it was a dream experience or something you actually
experienced? Exactly. I'm trying to explain it exactly as it happened.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find out. I know it wasn't a dream because it happened, and it was too real. And I'm wondering if he heard anything like this before.
Okay, Bob?
It's very hard to define. We have heard things similar to that, and it's very hard to identify them just from the information that you provided, Bob. Hard to say. At least you are now to a point anywhere where you consider this being a reality and then something other than just a dream. And one way you could find out a lot more about it is simply lie back and become relaxed. If you were a meditator, you could do that. And then reach back and remember that, track back to that event, and gather in more details to sort of mentally relive it. And you may be able to recreate it. That may tell you a great deal about it.
A little bit of hypnotic regression on yourself, as it were.
That's one way of calling it. You can call it that. It's sort of a... what we call a theta recall, but you
mm-hmm.
Well, to me, this really happened. I've told my wife that I just married 6 months ago, and my mom and my dad, because my mom came home that afternoon with the groceries, and I ran downstairs and I told her about this. And to me, this really happened, and I've tried to explain to certain people, you know, close friends.
Why don't you try what Bob suggested there, Bob, and that would be to get back in a meditative state if you can and recall as more information about it. Just drag that up out of your own memory as much as possible and make sure to yourself. That's about the best we can come up with for you here.
Yeah, I'm 30 years old. This happened when I was 17.
I can imagine. It is kind of a traumatic thing. I'm going to have to let you go now, Bob, because we've got so many other callers, but we appreciate you sharing that with us.
Okay, I've enjoyed your show.
Thank you.
Thank you, too.
I'm Bill Jenkins, and with me is Robert A. Monroe, the Monroe Institute. We're talking about the out-of-body experience, and occasionally we get into UFOs and things. Okay, we have Joe on the line. Hi, Joe.
Oh, Bob, I've come across, in my experiences, that this country is being overrun by KGB projectionists. They're all through Washington. They're at every major research center in the United States, and no one's doing anything to protect the situation. World War III is already being fought on a mental projection level, and the Russians are ahead and winning until we put some money in the right place and some right people in the right place to stop what they are doing in eavesdropping to their astral bodies and picking up on every major political figure in the United States and every major institute with a secret research information going on.
Joe, where do you get your information?
Where does Bob get his? You go out of your body and you look for yourself, Bob.
No, I mean, you know, you were saying some definite things there. I've heard
Absolutely.
Them before.
Absolutely. Because astral projection is a very definite thing.
I was just wondering where if you had some research on that or you had...
I'm researching it.
Yeah, you were researching it.
That's right.
Okay.
I'm my own private institute.
All right.
I have no outside research funds. I don't request any. I don't need any. And that's what's happening to this country. And this country is being taxed by the government, and the government is not protecting the people of this country.
All right. Bob, do you have any...
The only thing I can say is that... that somewhere in the not too distant future, I think you might look for a Sputnik type of event, if you which shook the United States up so much back in the what was it, the 40s, whatever it was,
58,
which in turn caused us to take a gigantic leap into space. We suspect, and I'll put that the strongest that I can make it, that somewhere within the next 3 years, a Sputnik-type event will take place, let's say, that the Soviets cannot hide, which will in turn act as the sledgehammer that will attract attention here in the United States.
Well, we do know that the Soviets are seemingly far advanced to our research in the matter of utilizing psychic abilities of the human being as well as these other abilities. And, you know, Joe just may very well be on target. We've had that on this program before, and I've heard other things.
Yes.
They are doing a great deal of work in that area where the Pentagon seems to not believe that anybody can go out of body, and so how could they be useful?
Well, look for such an event, and that will change national opinion, including the government and everyone else.
Because the government has to become more spiritual and mental instead of becoming physical and diabolical and want to kill and tax. It has to want to be creative and positive on a higher level. And until it comes in contact with the higher world, it's going in the wrong direction with its weapons of murder instead of its weapons of creation. And astral projection is a weapon and a definite intelligence medium of gathering information, just like our U2s were.
Well, we know that the CIA, for instance, uses astral projectionists.
Yeah, they better get more, and they better get more competent people that are doing it, and they better start controlling their diets and their whole complete life, and better get higher beings in there to do the work because they're incompetent.
Well, there's a lot of them that are working on it that are pretty well down the line, but I agree with you, we need more of them doing it.
And you know the brainwave frequency the Russians are working on, they're broadcasting those big antennas they put down in Cuba, that's to go out in the nine cycles per second frequency to project into Mexico and into the United States.
Anywhere between 8 and 10, and they already are powering it into the western part of the United States.
That's right.
Okay, Joe.
You know what's going on, Bill.
Sure do.
Okay.
Thank you very
much,
Joe. Appreciate the call.
Bye.
You're on a Saturday night. It's Open Mind. I'm Bill Jenkins, and with me is Robert A. Monroe. We're talking about the out-of-body experience. We just got into the ELF frequencies there just a little bit with Joe, but we'll have some other things for you in just a moment.
Yeah.
Yes.
You mean, have you, actually?
We've conducted experiments. One of our favorite ones is to go back and have various people go back and piggyback themselves when they were, say, 4 or 5 years old. And it is a piggyback. It's not assuming the personality that you have when you were 4 or 5 years old, but to go back and piggyback it. And it's most, most fascinating to see it take place. And to experience it is quite a thing. That's the easiest form of working in time. We have a time experiment where we have a consciousness state we call Focus 15, which is a state of no time. And it's like the being at the hub of a wheel, and that time is the rim of the wheel. And you can go out, say you come into that from the spoke in, say, February of 83. And then you can rotate around, say, being at the hub of the wheel. You can rotate backwards or forwards and then move back into time. And it's most fascinating to do.
I mean, let me get you on that one, because that's a new one for me, Bob. You can actually then go out of body and then go back in time and be with yourself, as it were, at
yes.
some period in the past.
Yes.
That should be quite a fascinating
experience. It is very fascinating, because you get so amused at some of your own activities as, say, a four-year-old child. And we've had a lot of philosophic questions about such activities, and we go as observers rather than participants, as it were.
Well, that would seem to be like would be a great form of research to clear up perhaps some vague moments in history. Just go back and relive them.
I suspect that it can be done, yes.
It can be.
Okay. My other question was, what happens to your body when you leave it? Like, what happens? Just
what happens to one's body when one leaves it?
Yeah.
It drops into, if you move, it's in direct, the inverse square law is in effect, more or less. The closer you are to the body, the more you respond. And closer means in phase with it, is a better word. The more your physical body responds to what you do in the out-of-body state. The more you go out of phase, your body becomes more comatose. Your breathing becomes very shallow. Your blood pressure drops and stays at a lower level.
Oh, I see.
And your temperature drops, and your body temperature, all your body functions drop down. Very similar to Delta sleep.
Okay, I have one more question.
Grayson, I want you to make it real fast.
Okay, how do you do this? How do you leave your body?
How do we do this?
Yeah.
How do I do it, or how do we do it in our research?
We're all taking notes now.
Well, once I've gotten lazy, as a matter of fact. I used to go through all sorts of fancy rituals. My typical activity now takes place somewhere during the night, when I will go through a couple sleep cycles, as it were, and I wake up, and I am totally awake and completely relaxed and very much refreshed. It's absurdly easy for me, anyway, at that state to simply, it's like unhooking. And there I simply am drifting free, and I do mean just very drifting, very slowly and easily. And it's so easy that I don't bother to fool with it many other times. And at that point, my activity has changed radically in the last, 7 or 8 years. About 7 or 8 years ago, I decided that this consciousness in my own self, it didn't have the knowledge to do the things that might be possible in the out-of-body state. So at that, say, 3 o'clock in the morning, I in turn would simply turn the activities over to my total self. And what that means is has many generic modes. And that's when the real excitement began for me, was when I began to do that.
Okay,
Grayson.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. The question brought up something that was fascinating to me, that you can travel in time. What about traveling into the future, Bob?
Yes.
Well, what about it?
Have you ever done that?
I have, and others. We do this quite consistently. We have a... that's one of the exercises we perform in our Gateway program, is because there's traveling into the future, and it's most fascinating.
What do you find in the future?
Well, what do you want to find?
Well, what's going to happen?
One of the things we determined that there are certain, definitely there are alternate realities of the future.
I see.
And if you look at what might be the most probable one, that's usually the one that the given future that we observe.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you want to know about it?
Well, let me see.
There's a new world coming, if that's what you want to know.
There is a new world coming.
That's right.
How quickly is it going to get here?
Well, let's put it this way. In about the year 2025, by that time, the whole world pattern will have changed completely into a new world.
And a much better one, I would suspect.
Yes, yes, better. Certainly different.
We hope that we can avoid some awesome conflicts between these great superpowers of ours. You see that happening?
The ones that we have explored do not, that doesn't show up as such. Man is much more preoccupied with other things to bother with things like that.
I should hope so.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Grayson. Good questions. Appreciated them.
Bye.
And before we get to another questioner, we have a fascinating young lady who just stepped in here who will be joining you right after Paul Harvey News at midnight tonight. Barbara Essenson. Barbara?
Thank you. And I'm Mr. Monroe. I'm fascinated by this conversation. I almost feel guilty by having my own guest come on midnight, but not guilty enough to give up my 5 hours. Well, you had a caller a couple of minutes ago, I guess perhaps in this hour, who talked about having an out-of-body experience when she was young, when she was 4 or 5 years old, and her mother admonished her, and then she was unable to have it. I had a similar experience, but no one admonished me. I got old enough and admonished myself. When I was 4, 5, and 6 years old, I had a similar experience to what she had, and it seemed perfectly okay. When I got to be 10 and 11 years old, I thought, this is crazy.
You've got out-of-body too, right?
Now I want to get back into it again, and it's a little bit more difficult.
Let's go together.
Okay, we'll do that. Well, on my show tonight, I'm going to have some in-body experiences. One of my favorite people in the whole world, Ingrid Wilmont, I don't know if you've met her. She also happens to be one of California's best-known restaurant writers. She's going to tell us where to dine elegantly in Southern California for under $10 a dinner. She's a lady that writes the column every year for Los Angeles Magazine, and we're going to get a preview peek on
you
that.
You definitely have to be in-body for that.
Right. Ingrid looks like Zsa Zsa Gabor. She writes like Neil Simon and has a sense of humor of Steve Allen. After we find out where to eat, at 2 o'clock, our guest is going to help us eat well. Dietitian Vicki Evans is going to do something very interesting besides answering all of our questions. She's going to rate the popular diets, the Pritikin diet, the Scarsdale diet, Beverly Hills diet. I'd like to hear what she has to say about the Beverly Hills diet. She also specializes in diets for cancer patients and preventive medicine. So I'm looking forward to a very full morning, and I'm going to get out of here so you can get more questions on this fascinating subject.
Okay, Barbara. Thank you very, very much. It's one of my favorite people. Every other week, Barbara's here, right after the Open Mind show. She gets into so many encouraging kind of things. All right.
Bill, I heard all these talks about nice places to eat and everything. We have been conducting an interesting experiment in terms of the hemisync that might be fascinating. We have, again, an either-or, and it seems to work quite well, where we can teach a person to maximize the effect of eating, meaning that you can maybe get eat a cup of rice, for example, and you can get 5,000 in caloric value out of it.
Oh, really?
High nutrition. And the other side of that coin is that you can eat all you want, you won't gain a pound.
Oh, I'll bet you we could do a long 2-hour show just on that one by itself. Has that come up in the tapes that you have?
No, we haven't got it out yet, but there's quite a bit of pressure to get it, as you can get it.
You just got a ton more pressure on that. Let me know about whenever that tape is out, because I know the folks will want to know about it. I don't happen to have the problem myself. I can
at all those fancy restaurants, I can see calories building up and up, and I can also understand the problems with a pretty good diet, too.
Hey, will you keep me up to date on that when you get it out?
I sure will.
And we'll try to get you back on and talk more about that aspect of it. We have, I believe, Phyllis on the line, who has an interesting question for us. Phyllis?
Hi there, Bill. I wanted to ask Bob if he has visited other planets in our solar system, such as Venus, what it's like there, and also if there's a 10th planet out beyond Pluto, and what is Pluto like? And these intelligent beings, what galaxies were they in?
Well, I can give you the best. I can perhaps give you an illustration, and perhaps that would help. Along on one of our explorations, and this is some years back, and I'm talking about 7 years ago at least, we had a team go out, and they came praying in their reporting and say, we found it, and we found an intelligent being. So we rushed back out had this team go out. And that's the interesting thing, that, speaking of verification, where you have two people in a team and they're entirely independent from your laboratory point of view. In other words, they're isolated one from another, and they're reporting identical things and reporting joining each other these same things and reporting the identical events. In this case, this had to be our physicist in this particular exercise, as it were. And he encountered this building, and he finally got into this what appeared to be a building, and here was this a being sitting there, and he finally got the attention of the being, and I'm paraphrasing in words, and he of course asked the being, "Where am I?" Which is the first question that they usually ask, and this guy, we usually ask, and the being in essence says, "Well, don't you know?" And kind of ends and haws, and the being brings out what appears to be a star map, a huge celestial map, and it was in a form that we don't understand. But anyway, he says, "Now, where did you come from?" And and then points, first of all, says, "Here's where you are," and points to a spiral galaxy and a little point on that, and then says to our explorer, who is a very well-known physicist, Nelly, says, "Now, where on this do you come from?" And the best that our poor physicist could do is to push his head to one side and stick his thumb back over his shoulder and say, "I came from that way."
So you don't know where you are.
That's right.
Is there a tenth planet out there, Robert?
Are there what?
A tenth planet, one beyond Pluto.
I can't give you an answer because we haven't really looked for it. We haven't found the solar system that exciting.
Well, it seems to me that possibly would be true if you're just scooting around from galaxy to galaxy, that the solar system here is this backyard.
Well, that's been our point of view anyway.
All right, Phyllis, does that help you?
Somewhat. I'd like to know if he has a book on some of this information.
Yes, we have. There's a sequel due out this year to Journeys Out of the Body, and it's called Far Journeys.
Far
and,
Journeys?
It will contain much of that type of material in it.
Yeah, but it's not out yet, Phyllis, but it will be shortly.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
You're spending Saturday night with Bill Jenkins and Robert Monroe on Open Mind. We're talking about some way-out stuff. Robert?
Well, medium way out anyway.
Medium way out. And we'll be back in just a moment.
Okay. I have a couple quick questions and one a little bit longer question. Okay. When you're out of your body, and you got out of your body, right? Okay. What I'm interested in, can you communicate in some way with people who are presently in their body?
Yes, you can. It, one of the biggest problems in that is that when one is in their consciousness mode in physical matter, as it were, it is much as if they are asleep from the person in the out-of-body state.
So what I'm interested in is, if you are out of your body, can you talk to somebody who is, you know, sitting there in their body? Can you talk?
Oh, you can. If,
okay,
if you
I have a second question. Can you go out of your body at any time?
I probably could, but I'm lazy.
Okay, but there are people who can more or less set a time, an hour from now, they could leave their body?
Yes,
okay. Okay, Mr. Monroe, you are in Virginia, right?
That's true.
Okay, if you set your mind on it, and I think you should have, to prove to a skeptical person like myself, how come you didn't come from Virginia out to Los Angeles to do this interview? I think that would be conclusive proof, and this is, you know, I want an answer on this. I'd really like to know why you didn't come out here and communicate in person with the show.
Why did I come in person?
That's the question, yes, sir.
Do you mean physically?
No. Out of your body, come to Los Angeles and conduct the interview.
Because I would not be able to put words in, and I would not be able to vibrate sound enough to get through a microphone there.
The microphone wouldn't pick you up.
That is correct.
Well, you can communicate with somebody. Electronic gear cannot pick this up.
You cannot. That's true.
How come? I mean, if the human ear can pick something up, how come electronic gear can't? That doesn't make any sense at all.
Because you're dealing with the electricity, electromagnetism, and things like that, which this is not.
A voice is a voice.
A voice is a voice, but if I could shout loud enough, yes.
I mean, look.
My sound waves.
No, I mean, a voice is a voice. Electronic gear, all a radio is, excuse me, or a telephone is an electronic device. It vibrates sound.
That's right.
Well, the communication that goes on here, Terry, the communication that goes on he's talking about is not a sound wave that happens. If
no, he said he could talk to me.
He said he could communicate with you, Terry.
He said he could talk. No, and that was the key to the question.
No,
when he was in his spirit, when he was out of his body. See, I'm a very skeptical person, and I really find this hard to believe.
Well, Terry,
yeah.
I think you misunderstood what he had to say there. He can't, whenever he's out of body and, say, in your presence, I don't think he's going to be able to talk in your ear very well. There is a form of communication that goes on, but it is not at that plane, that level.
It's a type of
psychic communication, if you understand what that is, and these microphones just won't pick it up.
Well, can I see him?
Under certain conditions, yes.
Well, what conditions?
You would have to be a little bit less of left brain than you are now, first of all.
Less brain?
In other words, you'd have to be in a more relaxed state. That's basically, first of all.
Okay, well, if ideal conditions with somebody other than me, then they could see you. Well, but how could I talk to you when you're out of your body?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I could talk to you, but you can't talk to me?
Yeah, but you're not talking to me with your vocal cords. You're talking to me with a certain part of your energy system that is attached to your brain, if you want to put it that way, or is radiated from your brain.
Mind energy.
Okay, well, whatever.
Okay, Terry?
Okay, thank you very much.
Right, thank you there.
Bye.
Well, Terry's trying in there, Bob, anyway, to get something going. You're on KABC with Bill Jenkins and Bob Monroe. We're talking about the out-of-body travel, and 6 minutes away from midnight, and we have Jim on the line.
Good evening.
Yeah.
I enjoy your show, as always, and I wanted to ask just one question.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I've read your book, and I found it very interesting, and I think it was an important book. I also found the research of Dr. James Donahoe also very interesting. My question involves... Okay, I want to start out by saying that I'm not a skeptic in the sense that I personally can accept the phenomena as being real, okay? But I have a question that deals with the problem of proof that you alluded to earlier and a resultant assumption or leap of logic that is often made. And I just have one question. Now, many times when people deal with the phenomenon of near-death experience, they make a leap of logic and they say, and therefore this proves life after death. Now, I know that's not completely analogous. However, there's a slight analogy in that many of the researchers, with the exception of maybe Dr. Donahoe, take that same line of reasoning. They say I'll start my question this way. Assuming that it can be demonstrated, for the sake of argument, let's say that it can be demonstrated or can be accepted or proved that you can go a distance with a non-physical means, like
we've been talking about.
Right, like some of the research by Dr., I think his name is Tanos, some of these other things. Let's say it can be demonstrated. My question is this. How can you go a step further and say, therefore, we can make a further extrapolation that there is life after death? That is to say, isn't it possible that you can go remote distances while you are alive, but once you are dead... Then, in other words, how can you make this extra leap of faith and say, and therefore it proves there's a life after death? That's my question.
I'll just give you a quick answer as to how we...
But I'm very serious about this.
A very quick answer. We occasionally work with terminal cases, the people who have a scheduled death time, as it were. And our price for doing this and working with them so that they can, as it were, establish a beachhead where they're going, our price or our pay for this is that they... come back and let us know how it works. And they do.
Okay, Jim.
I guess that answered my question.
Yeah, it sure does.
Okay, thank you.
All right. I think we have time for maybe one more call before all is said and done. And I believe we have Greg on the line, and that may follow in line. Greg, what's on your mind here?
Well, I just wanted to ask Robert a quick question. What his views of religion are, how he accepts different religions that are brought to him.
What do I do, Bill? Do I tell it the way it is?
Or... Yeah, tell them the way it is.
we have description, and I've used it, I think, once. We have what we call local traffic, and which is a very mixed-up jumble, as it might be, say, in downtown Los Angeles. And we have what we call going interstate, which is a nice, smooth way. And the rules and perceptions are entirely different. From the perspective, and quite honestly, as we see it from our point of view, that all of the religious concepts that we have here as man are simply local traffic.
Okay, Greg?
That's very interesting.
Kind of local traffic, isn't
it? Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, that about wraps it up. We don't have time to get to any more callers, and I do want to take time, Robert, to thank you for staying up on an early Sunday morning there in Virginia.
Well, it's my pleasure. We have a nice free moon outside tonight.
Well, you have given us two fascinating hours tonight, and I have thoroughly enjoyed them. The workshops, I hope, will soon come to being out here in Los Angeles, where a lot of these folks can get into the Monroe Institute workshops and find out more about this and what it can mean to their lives.
I just have them write it, that's all.
Give them... Just write you?
Yeah, just the address that I gave.
And you'll get back to them with the information. And there are tapes available, and they'll get that from you also.
That's true.
Okay, Bob. Thank you very, very much for being with us, and let's do it again.
I will, Bill.
All right.
Nice to
you. Night. And we'll see all of you next week. See you then.